Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are looking at this really fascinating strategy document. It's titled AI Lead Qualification Strategy for Orange County Service Businesses.
Yeah, which I know sounds incredibly specific.
It really does. I mean, it sounds like a super narrow, localized instruction manual. But our mission today is to show you why this document is actually, it's basically a masterclass.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. A masterclass for surviving the massive AI hype cycle we are currently in.
Exactly. We are going to unpack how you can evaluate any major tech decision in 2026 without, you know, blowing your entire budget or completely breaking your company.
Right, because setting the context here is just so crucial. I mean, looking at 2026, companies everywhere are operating inside an absolute pressure cooker.
Yeah, the landscape has completely shifted.
It has the Wild West phase, you know, the era of just throwing money at anything with AI slapped on the label. That is completely over. Budgets are locked down tight. Security expectations, especially when we're talking about data privacy, they are incredibly stringent right now.
Well, and buyers have been burned, right?
Exactly. They've been burned by failed tech rollouts. So now they demand hard, measurable evidence before they trust any new software recommendation. The tolerance for an expensive experiment is practically zero.
Which makes sense. And, you know, I noticed something really fascinating when I was reading through this guide. The authors repeat this very specific mantra of four questions. They repeat it like 10 different times throughout the text.
Yeah, they really hammer it home.
They do. They just drop this identical block of questions into the middle of various chapters. It acts as this massive neon sign pointing to their core philosophy. So, okay, let's unpack this, because today we're going to crack the code on this exact methodology.
To do that, though, we first have to look at what's actually happening on the ground.
Like, yeah.
Before we even touch procurement strategy or vendor scorecards, we need to clarify what AI lead qualification actually means in this modern environment.
Right, because we aren't just talking about a basic website chatbot, right? The kind that asks for an email and says, you know, someone will be in touch.
Oh, no, not at all. The definition has definitely shifted.
So in this 2026 context, what is the AI actually doing mechanically when a new lead comes into a business?
Well, mechanically, it's performing this really deep instant analysis. An AI lead qualification system basically intercepts a potential client's inquiry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it analyzes their data against the company's historical success rates.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It scores the probability of them actually buying the service and then routes them to the right human or automated track.
So it's looking at a lot of variables at once.
Exactly. It might look at a service request, analyze the zip code, evaluate the specific language the customer used, gauge the scale of the problem, and then cross-reference all of that with the company's current capacity calendar.
That is wild.
It's doing all of this predictive triage in milliseconds.
So it essentially functions like a highly intelligent bouncer at the door of your sales department.
That's a great way to put it.
Just figuring out who gets the VIP treatment and who gets sent to the, you know, the self-service line. Which I guess brings us to the core problem. Why do companies start shopping for this bouncer in the first place? Do leadership teams just wake up and decide, hey, we need more algorithms in our sales funnel?
No, usually they look for it because they are experiencing profound operational pain.
Okay, pain like what?
Well, the search for enterprise AI is almost always a trauma response to an internal gap.
Mm.
A company might be suffering from just dreadfully slow response times, or they're dropping valuable leads.
Oh, right.
Or they're struggling with unclear internal ownership, where literally nobody knows who is supposed to follow up with a high-value prospect.
So they see their competitors moving faster.
Yes. They feel the opportunity cost bleeding their bottom line,
uh-huh.
And they think buying an AI tool is this instant magical cure.
You know, it's like buying an AI qualification tool because your internal lead generation is chaotic. Is basically like buying a high-performance sports car because you're consistently late to work.
Yes, exactly.
The car is amazing, right? It's incredibly fast and sleek. But the car will not fix the fact that you keep hitting snooze on your alarm clock four times every morning. Are we essentially treating a behavioral symptom with incredibly expensive software?
That is a perfect mechanical analogy. Because, I mean, if you put a terrible driver in a faster car, they just crash faster.
And do way more damage.
Exactly. So the guide's primary antidote to this exact problem is to hit the brakes. It explicitly instructs leadership teams not to start by looking at vendor demos.
Which is hard because the demos are always designed to look like magic, solving problems you didn't even know you had. It's a really difficult temptation to resist.
They do. They sell a frictionless dream. But this strategy demands you start by defining the exact business process that needs to improve before you ever look outward at the market.
So you have to look inward first.
Right. You must clearly identify the specific risk you want to reduce and pinpoint the exact metric that proves progress.
Okay, so like what kind of metric?
You have to ask yourself, are we trying to improve the initial conversion rate? Or are we trying to reduce the time it takes to route a lead from 10 minutes down to 10 seconds?
Ah, got it.
If a company cannot map its current state and define the exact metric they want to move, they have no business buying an AI solution. They're simply shopping for a placebo.
Well, and you just mentioned that bad drivers crash faster in sports cars. So before we hand over the keys to an AI vendor who is making sure the internal driver actually knows how to drive,
right?
Because the source outlines this strict internal architecture that has to be built before a vendor even enters the building.
Yes, the internal house must be in order. The source calls this the internal ownership model. It argues that any successful technology implementation requires four distinct internal roles.
Okay, let's break these down. Because looking at the list, the business owner, the technical owner, the operational reviewer, and the executive sponsor, it seems like a recipe for constant infighting.
I mean, in a smaller firm, one person might wear a couple of these hats, but the responsibilities themselves must remain distinct.
But walk me through how these four actually function together in reality without paralyzing the company.
Well, they function as a deliberate system of checks and balances. Hmm. The business owner, for instance, defines the ultimate outcomes. They are purely focused on the bottom line.
So they're asking, what's the ROI? Does this tool actually generate revenue?
Exactly. Then you have the technical owner. Their job is to validate feasibility. They look at the existing tech stack and determine, you know, if this new AI tool will integrate smoothly or if it's going to completely break the company's current database architecture.
I can already see the friction there. I mean, imagine a local HVAC or plumbing company.
Sure.
The business owner wants this flashy new tool that promises a 30% bump in dispatched calls. And the technical owner is the one who has to explain that the new AI doesn't talk to their dispatch software from 2018.
And that friction is exactly what the framework is designed to create. Yes. Because without that argument happening internally, the company buys the tool and then discovers it doesn't work with their dispatch software. The technical owner grounds the business owner's ambition in reality.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then you add the third pillar, the operational reviewer. Their job is arguably the most difficult. They have to confirm the day-to-day fit.
So they look at how this changes the daily workflow of the actual human beings using the software.
Precisely.
They are essentially the advocate for the floor workers, ensuring the new interface doesn't make their daily jobs miserable.
Exactly. And finally, you have the executive sponsor. This is the heavyweight who steps in to remove blockers, resolve the deadlocks between the other three, and secure the budget.
I have to challenge this structure a bit, though.
All right, go ahead.
In a fast-moving AI landscape where agility is supposedly everything, doesn't assigning four different owners guarantee the project loses momentum? You're essentially forming a committee, and committees are traditionally where good ideas stall out and die.
That's a fair point, and the guide addresses that fear head-on. But without this specific ownership structure, a good recommendation usually dies immediately after the first enthusiastic meeting anyway.
Oh, right. Everyone nods, agrees it's a great idea, and then goes back to their day jobs.
Because nobody actually owns the implementation. The friction we just talked about is necessary to prevent a massive disaster. The business owner prevents the team from over-customizing the software before validating the core process. They keep everyone focused on the business goal, not the neat little features the AI can do.
They prevent scope creep before it starts.
And the operational reviewer prevents one of the most dangerous rollout mistakes highlighted in the text, which is running legacy workflows alongside the new AI ones.
Wait, like running the old manual lead routing system and the new AI system at the exact same time?
Yes.
I imagine employees just default to whatever they are used to.
Always. Human nature dictates that if you do not explicitly shut off the old way of doing things, employees will revert to what is comfortable. So your incredibly expensive AI tool just sits there collecting dust. Or worse, it creates duplicate data.
Which is a nightmare.
It is. The operational reviewer forces the transition. They map out exactly when and how the old process is sunsetted.
So we have our internal committee battling it out, checking each other's blind spots, and confirming we actually know our own processes. How does this committee evaluate the external partners?
Right, because the sales pitches for enterprise AI in 2026 are incredibly polished.
Exactly. How do you pierce through the marketing?
This is where the 2026 scorecard comes in. The guide insists that capability, meaning does the tool actually qualify leads like it claims to, is just one small fraction of the evaluation.
Really? Just a fraction?
Yeah. The scorecard demands you evaluate vendors on security protocols, implementation history, the quality of their documentation, their support models, cost transparency, and exit readiness. You score them based on verifiable evidence, not their marketing promises.
Which exposes some major warning signs. The source lists very specific red flags, vague scopes of work, obviously, unclear access controls. But the one that really stood out to me was the absolute necessity of a rollback plan.
Oh, a rollback plan is critical. Think about it. If the AI tool integrates with your customer database and accidentally scrambles your lead routing on day two.
Oh, no.
Right. How do you revert to yesterday's state? If a vendor doesn't have a concrete step-by-step answer for that, they are a massive vulnerability. They are basically asking you to take on all the operational risk.
The text also specifically warns against pricing structures that hide maintenance costs. The upfront license might look incredibly appealing, but the mandatory support subscription required just to keep the AI from breaking bleeds the budget dry over a two-year period.
It's a classic procurement trap.
Yo.
But the absolute deal breaker, according to the text, is a vendor who cannot clearly explain how success will be measured in the first 90 days.
So if they wave away the measurement phase and just tell you to trust the algorithm to figure it out?
You walk away immediately.
Wow. Here's where it gets really interesting, though. What does a good partner actually look like in this framework? Because the guide offers some counterintuitive advice here.
It does.
You'd assume the best vendor is the one who agrees to every single feature request and promises to revolutionize your entire sales funnel in a week. But the source argues the strongest partners are actually those who actively try to narrow the scope of the project.
Yeah, a strong partner acknowledges the complexity of your business. They want to shrink the initial target area so they can prove value quickly without breaking your existing systems. They do not pretend their software is a magic wand.
The guide even suggests you should ask vendors what would cause them to pause a project.
Yes.
You are actively asking them to define their own failure conditions before you even sign a contract.
It is a brilliant filtering mechanism. A desperate or inexperienced vendor will claim nothing will pause the project because they guarantee success. But a disciplined vendor will have immediate answers. They will tell you that if your internal team fails to provide clean historical data by week two, they pause. If your operational reviewer stops attending the integration meetings, they pause.
That makes a lot of sense.
It demonstrates they actually care about the implementation succeeding, not just securing the initial sale.
And that level of discipline is crucial for avoiding vendor lock-in, which seems to be this major anxiety running throughout this entire guide.
Vendor lock-in is a massive threat in 2026. Companies are terrified of handing their core lead qualification processes over to a black box AI, only to realize a year later that they are trapped.
Oh, I bet.
The vendor doubles their prices, and you cannot leave because they hold all your historical data hostage.
It's like building your entire house on rented land. If the landlord decides to change the rules or raise the rent, you can't just pick up your foundation and move it. You lose everything you've built.
Exactly. So to avoid that trap, the guide dictates that before you sign anything, you demand clear data export options. You need to know exactly who owns the custom configurations.
Right.
You have to clearly outline the administrative handoff steps. You build the exit strategy into the initial contract so you never lose control of the land you built on.
Okay, so we have built our internal committee. We have thoroughly interrogated a vendor, and we've made sure we aren't building on rented land. We have a contract.
We do.
So how does a company physically roll this out without turning their sales department into a chaotic experiment?
They rely on the 90-day success blueprint. This is a rigid, phased timeline designed specifically to prevent the implementation from becoming an open-ended money pit. It forces the company and the vendor into a tight, focused rhythm.
And this first phase, day 0 to 30, is fascinating because absolutely no implementation happens.
None.
I imagine by week 3, leadership is getting highly impatient to actually see this new AI tool do something. How does the guide manage that pressure?
Well, it manages that pressure by framing the first 30 days entirely around risk mitigation. This period is purely for clarifying the current state and identifying priority gaps. The internal team and the vendor are mapping the reality of the business's data.
Right.
Because if you skip this step and rush into implementation, you end up feeding bad, unstructured data into a sophisticated AI, which just generates sophisticated garbage at a much faster rate.
Garbage in, garbage out, just automated. So once you have a clean map, you move to days 31 through 60.
This is the pilot phase. You implement the highest value improvement, but the core instruction is to keep it small. The pilot must be small enough to complete quickly, but deeply integrated enough to expose real operational risks.
So if it's going to fail, you want it to fail small and contained.
Exactly.
And that leads into the final stretch, days 61 to 90, where you review the results, document the lessons learned, and make a hard decision. Do we expand this tool or do we pull the plug?
It forces a practical checkpoint.
Right. So you aren't waiting 12 months to realize the tool isn't actually qualifying leads.
It creates total accountability. And this is actually where that mantra you noticed comes into play.
Ah, yes. The four questions repeated 10 times.
At every single stage of this 90-day plan, leadership must ask, what evidence supports this recommendation? Who owns the outcome after launch? What risks must be handled before implementation? And how will success be measured at 30, 60, and 90 days.
That is so rigorous.
If the team hesitates on any of those answers at any phase, the project halts until they find the answer.
I want to dig into a very specific element of this implementation phase. The practical next step that follows those questions in the text almost always involves documenting the current state.
Right.
Now, in my experience, documentation is often treated as the ultimate afterthought. It's the boring paperwork assigned to the newest person on the team after the exciting launch is finished. Why is this guide treating documentation like a matter of life and death?
Because in the context of enterprise AI, documentation isn't just administrative paperwork. It is a literal security and compliance shield.
A shield? How so?
The guide makes it explicitly clear that robust documentation protects the company if a key internal employee abruptly leaves. It protects the company if the vendor suddenly changes their terms of service, or if a critical system fails and you need to execute that rollback plan we discussed earlier.
Oh, wow. So it's the foundation of business continuity.
It is the ultimate continuity plan. And beyond that, it's the clearest signal of a disciplined vendor. If a partner is lazy with their documentation, they are almost certainly lazy with their code and their security protocols.
That makes total sense.
The text makes a really vital point here. Even if the AI tool you are buying is just for qualifying marketing leads, the organization must heavily protect credentials, customer information, and administrative privileges. A marketing tool with a poorly secured API connection is just as dangerous as a compromised accounting system.
Hackers do not care which door they use to enter your network. That is a terrifying but very real mechanism. You are plugging an external algorithmic brain into your raw customer data. You need a perfect map of exactly how it connects.
You do.
As we zoom out from this highly tactical rollout plan, we need to place this guide in its broader ecosystem. Who actually champions this disciplined, almost pessimistic approach to buying tech?
So the source attributes this specific roadmap to Technigene. They are a firm that steps into the process with Southern California companies well before these massive tech decisions become final.
So they aren't just selling a piece of software. They are facilitating the discovery process itself. The guide mentions they conduct baseline audits. How does that actually work mechanically?
Well, a baseline audit is essentially an X-ray of the company's current tech environment. Technigene comes in and analyzes how data flows through the organization right now. They look at existing Microsoft 365 setups, evaluate whether custom software is actually needed, and pinpoint where the security vulnerabilities are.
Oh, I see.
They act as that independent operational reviewer we talked about earlier, telling the company what they actually need versus what they think they want.
What stands out to me is how the source positions this local framework within a much larger tech landscape. It explicitly recommends comparing this internal audit framework against the broader context provided by massive industry giants like Salesforce or HubSpot. Why compare this highly specific Orange County guide to a behemoth like Salesforce?
Because it proves that the fundamental rules of implementation scale, regardless of size, whether you are a local service business with 50 employees or a Fortune 500 company using Salesforce, AI lead qualification is never a one-and-done purchase.
Right. It's an ongoing process.
It's a continuous looping cycle of analyzing business impact, tightening security, and managing costs. The ecosystem is constantly shifting, and your internal processes must shift alongside it.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Let's bring all these threads together. The biggest takeaway from this deep dive is kind of a massive plot twist. Adopting an AI lead qualification strategy isn't actually about the artificial intelligence at all.
No. The AI is merely the catalyst.
The entire process of evaluating, fighting over, and implementing this technology is actually a rigorous stress test for your own internal operational discipline. If your processes are broken, the AI will simply help you execute those broken processes much faster and more expensively. The guide is ultimately a mirror. It forces you to map every flaw and fix your business foundation before you automate it.
It forces you to map every flaw, yes. And this raises a deeply important and slightly unsettling implication.
Uh-oh.
We've established that preparing for AI lead qualification forces a company to perfectly document its internal gaps and its true ownership structures.
Right. It shines a glaring spotlight on all the internal messiness.
Exactly. So if we look down the road, we have to ask, what happens when the AI becomes sophisticated enough to start qualifying the efficiency of your internal teams before it even looks at your external leads?
Oh, wow.
If the AI is analyzing data flow, response times, and process adherence across the company, it will see exactly where the human bottlenecks are.
Yeah.
We really have to wonder, are we currently just fixing our processes to prepare for the AI, or are we approaching a point where the AI is eventually going to be the entity managing the process and managing us?
That is a lot to think about. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Before your next big technology meeting, before you get swept up in the slick demos and the industry hype, remember to take that four-question mantra with you. Hit the brakes, define your gaps, and don't let the shiny object blind you to the reality of your own process. Catch you next time.